Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 318, Side B, titled Kidding Around, Pedophilia and Organized Child Molestation in the Republican Party. This is being recorded on July 29th of the year 2001. What we've been dealing with is a book called The Franklin Cover-Up, subtitled Child Abuse, Satanism and Murder in Nebraska, authored by former, perhaps not former, maybe he's still a Republican state legislator from Nebraska, John W. DeCamp, himself a decorated infantry captain in Vietnam. This is not a book that can be dismissed as the product of the liberal news media, indeed, although some of the supplemental, some of the appendices in the second edition of the book and from June of 1996 contain some material that I don't think is credible, some of it giving aid and comfort, I would say, to elements that I would describe as explicitly fascist. Nonetheless, the fact that this book and other similar information has been consistently ignored by most of the mainstream media, not to mention the progressive sector, the fact that DeCamp had associated himself with the Militia and Patriot Network in the 1990s is not surprising, and that some of the supplemental material would show a certain degree of inaccuracy, some of the inaccuracies that are endemic to that milieu, I don't think should discredit the very heroic and patriotic efforts of John W. DeCamp. We're going to, by the way, the book was copyrighted 1992, and the second edition 1996, the ISBN number 0-9-632158-0-9. And we're going to resume and overlap very slightly with the information that was at the conclusion of Side A. To make a long story short, when the Franklin Credit Union in Nebraska collapsed, one of its most powerful officials, a fellow named Larry King, an African-American, not to be confused with the talk show host of the same name, and a rising and influential star in the Republican Party, was investigated in connection with a number of different misdeeds, and one of the most consistent allegations was one that there was the charge that Larry King had been one of a number of well-placed Republicans who was arranging for children to be sexually molested at various Republican functions, and that children of both sexes were being systematically molested. And although we won't have time to get into it in all likelihood in this half hour, in a future discussion, some of the investigative tributaries, the evidentiary tributaries in the case, run in the direction of mind control and the use of satanic cults as a cover for some of this insidious political activity. I would note that Larry King's efforts appeared, his alleged efforts appear to have been a continuation of a long-standing tradition in which the powerful can be sexually compromised and then controlled by using the potential disclosure of their indiscretions to basically manipulate them. We're going to resume with where we left off inside, at the end of Side 1. We were talking about one of King's contacts within the Republican and Washington establishment. That was a fellow named Craig Spence, who had run a very expensive call boy ring that catered to the political elite. And according to a number of journalistic accounts, Craig Spence's call boys had such access to the corridors of power that they could arrange nighttime tours of the White House. And according to report also, unlike most D.C. call boy rings, children were offered to his clients. One account maintained that alleged that the tours of the White House were arranged by top-level persons, including Donald Gregg, the National Security Advisor to then-Vice President George Bush. It was also alleged that Craig Spence was carrying out homosexual blackmail operations for the CIA. And later, Craig Spence turned up dead, allegedly a suicide in a Boston hotel room in November of 1989. And there are a number of evidentiary tributaries between this case and the Iran-Contra scandal. The main person, by the way, in the Iran-Contra scandal, as we've seen in numerous programs, was George Bush the First, George the First, or Big George, as I call him, the father of the current seated president. Of the death of Craig Spence and the allegations that some of the money that disappeared from the Franklin Credit Union found its way to the Nicaraguan Contras, we read as follows. When Craig Spence turned up dead, a suicide, police were quick to say, in a Boston hotel room in November of 1989, it was the latest in the long string of deaths of persons linked to Iran-Contra covert operations and funding. And I would add, as we will see at the end of this broadcast, a great many people involved in one aspect or another of the Franklin investigation also died in any one of a number of ways. Continuing. There is evidence that Larry King had Washington business in that area as well. Quote, In the 6.5 months since federal authorities closed Franklin, rumors have persisted that money from the credit union somehow found its way to the Nicaraguan Contra rebels, said a World Herald article on May 21, 1989. The first World Herald reporter on the Franklin case, James Allen Flannery, apparently found more than rumors about the money laundering. In late 1988, Flannery called Carol Stitt to discuss what he had learned. Their conversations were later in a February 21, 1989 report by Jerry Lowe. Carol's notes also have a reference to Larry King running guns and money into Nicaragua. Carol's notes on December 21, 1988 reflect that she talked with Flannery, and in addition to the Nicaraguan info, he was also now talking about CIA involvement and provided information that yesterday, December 20th, the FBI quit cooperating with him. Carol's notes next jump to February 6, 1989, where she talked on the phone with Flannery, and Flannery told her that the appropriate people didn't want to believe any of this, and who was ever going to prosecute it. Apparently, Flannery told Carol he was close to resigning, and the reasons he didn't think anyone wanted to do anything was because the possibility of a White House connection, the connections to a number of big people, and the fact that the investigators wanted badly to confine this all to the money. Also, many white people made Larry King. He did not happen on his own. Apparently, Flannery told Carol he was uncomfortable on the phone, his editor was distressed, and things he had written were continually edited. He wanted to get his byline off the article printed the 9th, among other things. Flannery also expressed concern to Carol that if he didn't get off this story, he worried about being compromised, unquote. Soon, Flannery was off the Franklin case, which continued for months to be the major news lead in Nebraska, and went to the University of Kansas on sabbatical. When he returned a year later, Flannery no longer wrote about Franklin. By the way, I would add that there is substantive evidence that the looting of the savings and loans, which were deregulated, by the way, following the recommendations on the Vice Presidential Task Force on Financial Deregulation, that vice president being George Bush, who was the main person in the Iran-Contra affair, the indications of SNL money going to the Contras are very firm indeed. Two books, The CIA, the Mafia, and George Bush by Pete Bruton, who wrote a series of award-winning articles for the Houston Post that I accessed in a miscellaneous archive show, as well as the book Inside Job, also accessed in that same series about the savings and loan scandal, document the channeling of some of the funds that disappeared from the SNLs in the direction of the Iran-Contra affair. And that is, we're going to resume with connections running in the direction of Iran-Contra in a number in just a few minutes. One of the things that John W. DeCamp goes into is a history of using sexual indiscretions, including pedophilia and gay sexual liaisons, in order to control the powerful in Washington, D.C. And I would note that many of the incidents and allegations of pedophilia in this case involve gay pedophilia as well. One of the points that John W. DeCamp makes is that a couple of names very familiar to longtime listeners to this program, the names of quote-ex-unquote CIA operatives Ed Wilson and Frank Turple, a couple of individuals with, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard, those names surface in connection with the name of another person that we spoke about in RFA number 4 about the Wilson-Turple connections, namely that of Republican kingmaker Robert Keith Gray. As of the publication of this book, the most powerful figure associated with the Hill and Knowlton public relations firm in Washington, D.C. Robert Keith Gray was a very prominent member of the Reagan camp, I guess one could say, and in turn, Robert Keith Gray was very close to Edwin Wilson, and according to John W. DeCamp, in turn, accessing research that was overlapped from a number of different researchers, connects Gray and Wilson and Turple to a number of these intelligence community-connected sexual blackmail operations, including the blackmail operations involving pedophiles, and those going directly back to the Franklin cover-up and the allegations contained in it. Talking about the history of sexual indiscretion and child molestation and blackmail in the Republican Party and the far right, DeCamp writes as follows in the Franklin cover-up. The career of another Nebraskan, Robert Keith Gray, illuminates that milieu and why it would be so congenial to a person like Larry King. Gray is the chairman and CEO of Hill & Knowlton, one of the two biggest public relations firms in the world with such blue-chip clients as AT&T, IBM, Xerox, and DuPont. CBS TV's 60 Minutes has called Hill & Knowlton, quote, by far the biggest, most influential PR firm in Washington, unquote, adding that again, quoting, critics accuse them of being an unelected shadow government, unquote. Gray first came to Washington, D.C. during the Eisenhower administration as Ike's appointment secretary and then secretary of the cabinet. He went to Hill & Knowlton in 1961. Gray played a role in Ronald Reagan's 1976 presidential campaign, and in 1980 he was deputy director of communications reporting directly to Bill Casey. On the strength of his connections in the new administration, he left Hill & Knowlton to set up his own public relations firm. Within a year, Gray and company secured over $9 billion in billings from a clientele including Warner Communications, NBC, GTE, Mutual of Omaha, the American Trucking Association, the American Iron and Steel Institute, and the governments of Canada and Turkey. In 1986, Hill & Knowlton bought out Gray and company. Gray became chairman and CEO of Hill & Knowlton. By the way, the Bill Casey referred to here, of course, is Reagan campaign manager and later CIA director William Casey. Continuing, said to be Nebraskan Harold Anderson's closest friend in Washington, unquote, Gray is also reportedly a specialist in homosexual blackmail operations for the CIA. Gray's own sexual proclivities were the subject of an article in the July-August 1982 issue of The Deep Backgrounder entitled, Reagan Inaugural Co-Chairman Powerful, quote, Closet Homosexual, unquote. The Deep Backgrounder tabloid featured exposés of homosexual networks in Washington, D.C. Its contributing editor was former CIA official Victor Marchetti. During the Watergate era, Robert Keith Gray served on the board of Consultants International, founded by CIA agent Edwin Wilson. When Wilson and fellow agent Frank Turpel got caught running guns abroad, Gray tried to deny his connection with Wilson. Yet 10 years before, according to Peter Moss's book Manhunt, in a top-secret Navy review of Wilson's intelligence career, Gray described Wilson as a person of, quote, unqualified trust, unquote, with whom he'd been in contact, again quoting, professionally two or three times a month since 1963, unquote. Author Jim Hogan in Secret Agenda reported another aspect of Wilson's work for the CIA. According to fugitive ex-CIA officer Frank Turpel, CIA-directed sexual blackmailing operations were intensive in Washington at about the time of the Watergate scandal. One of those operations, Turpel claims, was run by his former partner, Ed Wilson. Wilson's base of operations for arranging trysts for the politically powerful was, Turpel says, Korean agent Tongson Park's Georgetown Club. By the way, I would add the Koreagate scandal, in which Tongson Park was the main player, involved the Moon Organization, that the Moon Organization, in turn, is very close to the Bush family, as we've looked at in For the Record Program 84 and in For the Record Program number 291. Continuing, still quoting Hogan's text, in a letter to the author, Turpel explained that, quote, historically, one of Wilson's agency jobs was to subvert members of both houses of Congress by any means necessary. Certain people could be easily coerced by living out their sexual fantasy in the flesh. A remembrance of these occasions was permanently recorded via selected cameras. The technicians in charge of filming were Technical Services Division of the CIA. The unwitting porno stars advance in their political careers, some of whom may still be in office, unquote. And next, there are allegations that, in fact, Gray and Wilson were continuing the work that had long been done by, among others, Senator Joseph McCarthy's aide, Roy Cohn, who in turn was supposedly involved with setting up call boys for powerful political people. Returning to the Franklin cover-up, we read, Gray's associate Wilson was apparently continuing the work of a reported collaborator of Gray from the 1950s, McCarthy Committee Counsel Roy Cohn, now dead of AIDS. According to the former head of the Vice Squad for one of America's biggest cities, quote, Cohn's job was to run the little boys. Say you had an admiral, a general, a congressman who did not want to go along with the program. Cohn's job was to set them up, then they would go along. Cohn told me that himself, unquote. And again, it is alleged here that Ed Wilson and Robert Keith Gray basically continued that tradition. Continuing. The first president of Tongson Park's Georgetown Club, where Wilson's sexual blackmail operations were reportedly run, was Robert Keith Gray. Gray maintained his intelligence connections during the Reagan administration, according to an affidavit filed with the Southern District of Florida Court on December 12, 1986, by attorney Daniel Sheehan for the Christic Institute. The affidavit stated that when CIA Chief Casey, National Security Advisor Robert McFarlane, and NSC staff member Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North were devising a method to circumvent a congressional ban on arming the Contras, they turned to Gray and Company. Gray employee Rob Owen set up a private group to solicit funds for the Contras. Owen was called before Congress to testify on how he delivered bags of cash to the Contras. In February of 1989, Hill and Knowlton's Charles Perkins rushed to New York for a fraction of the firm's usual fee to help with public relations for Covenant House. The youth organization's director, Father Bruce Ritter, was alleged to have molested youth who took refuge with him. Lauded by the Reagan and Bush administrations as a showcase for the privatization of social services, Covenant House had expanded into Guatemala as a gateway to South America. According to intelligence community sources, the purpose was procurement of children from South America for exploitation in a pedophile ring. The flagship Guatemalan mission of Covenant House was launched by a former business partner of Nicaraguan dictator Anastasio Somoza, Roberto Alejos Arzu, A-R-Z-U, who had ties to the CIA, according to the Village Voice of February 20, 1990. The Voice quoted Jean-Marie Simon, author of Guatemala, Eternal Spring, Eternal Tyranny, quote, "It's like having Idi Amin on the board of Amnesty International," unquote. A top source of money for Covenant House has been Robert McCauley, founder of AmeriCares, a service organization implicated in channeling funds to the Contras. A close friend of the Bush family since Connecticut, Andover, and Yale days, McCauley has George Bush's brother Prescott on the AmeriCares board. Father Ritter was a vice president of AmeriCares at least until he had to resign from Covenant House in February of 1989, and spent weekends at McCauley's estate in Connecticut, according to a former Covenant House employee. As in New York, also in Nebraska, an institution that sheltered child abuse could count on protection from Washington. The attitude of federal agencies toward Larry King's Franklin Credit Union fits that mold. And then John W. DeCamp goes on to talk about numerous evidentiary tributaries between Larry King, the Franklin Credit Union, and the allegations of child molestation and the Iran-Contra affair. And bear in mind that the elder George Bush was the principal figure involved in directing Iran-Contra. Direct ties of Larry King to persons and institutions active in Iran-Contra are a matter of public record. In 1987, according to the World Herald, King donated $25,350 to Citizens for America, a group that sponsored speaking tours for Oliver North and Contra leaders. CFA was a key public relations group for Iran-Contra. King was a founding member and one of its largest contributors. According to his May 22, 1989 interview with Omaha radio station KKAR, King was trying to bring North to Nebraska. A former security guard for King has sworn that he saw North attend at least one of King's parties, a party at which children were also present. Since he was stationed outside, he has no knowledge of what might have happened inside. Quote, "I just thought it seemed kind of curious, the whole setup," unquote, he said. The head of CFA, David Carman, was a partner in Carman, Carman & Hugel, the public relations firm hired by Larry King to help set up one of his other projects, the Council for Minority Americans. It is alleged that Carman, Carman, and Hugel was one of King's direct links to the CIA. Another of the PR firm's partners was Max Hugel, formerly deputy director in charge of covert operations under the late William Casey at the CIA. Hugel earned the post for services rendered back to the 1980 Reagan-Bush campaign. Larry King met Hugel back then, since one of Hugel's responsibilities for the campaign committee was outreach and liaison work with minority groups. Brought to the agency by Casey in 1981, Hugel lasted only a few months at the CIA and was forced out under a cloud of scandal. King had a third friend at Carman, Carman & Hugel, Ambassador Gerald Carman, the father of David. What was Larry King doing with an Ambassador Carman, reflected a Washington intelligence specialist? It was the diplomatic pouches. Larry had even been lobbying for his appointment as an overseas ambassador, unquote. According to a Washington Times report of December 15, 1988, King did seek an ambassadorial appointment. One source specified that he wanted to represent the United States in Jamaica, where his wife Alice was born. During the height of Iran-Contra activities, 1984 to 86, Ambassador Carman was in the right place to have served as a bagman. He was U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations in Geneva, Switzerland from 1984 through August of 1986. The United States Ambassador to Switzerland in that period was Faith Whittlesley, who was depositioned by the Congressional Committee investigating Iran-Contra. Oliver North's multiple secret bank accounts were located at Credit Suisse. When Carmen left the diplomatic service in 1986, Carmen and Hugh Gale was and remained deeply involved in Nicaragua. According to the intelligence newsletter Unclassified, December 1990 and January 1991, the Carmen Group, under a National Endowment for Democracy contract, handled the U.S. activities of the Violeta Chamorro campaign in the Nicaraguan elections. If King was involved with CIA money laundering, that jibes with a report from a member of Concerned Parents. By the way, that was a group that was investigating the child molestation allegations at Franklin and involving King and other Republican bigwigs. Quote, I heard from two different black people in North Omaha that King used to send limousines down to Offutt Air Force Base, home of the Strategic Air Command, to pick up CIA personnel for parties. Unquote. The sometimes expansive Larry King used to talk fondly about his friends. In a September 7, 1988 interview with the Metropolitan, King said, quote, I know some of the people I admired aren't very popular. Ed Meese, the late Bill Casey of the CIA, and I love former Chief Justice Berger. Those are the people I really like to talk to. Bill Casey, I just thought so very highly of him, unquote. Larry King adored Bill Casey, but what about one of Casey's predecessors at Central Intelligence, George Bush? Ever since July 23, 1989, when the lead editorial in the World Herald said that, quote, one child is said to believe that she saw George Bush at one of King's parties, unquote, King's connection with Bush has been a frequently asked question about the Franklin case. Anxiety on this account has run especially high in Omaha's black community, where in December of 1990, one young lady stood up at a public meeting and proclaimed, quote, I think George Bush is involved in this child abuse case, and that is why all these people have been dying, unquote. Inside investigators of Franklin and the Webb case before it know that Bush's name came up at the very beginning, and it came up more than once. In July 1989 World Herald column, in an attempt to discredit this and other victim witness testimony, attributed the mention of Bush to a person, quote, under psychiatric care, unquote, meaning Loretta Smith. In reality, the report was from Nellie Patterson Webb. Nellie first brought up Bush in 1986 when she told Julie Walters about the sex parties she was flown to in Washington and Chicago. She saw Bush at two of these parties, she said, one in each city. Nellie also told Walters that one frequent partygoer with King was a boy named Brent, the one who was flown to another city somewhere after a falling out with King. Walters did not have the resources to cross-check this information with the life of Brant Thomas, the Boys Town resident who had moved in with Larry King. Franklin Credit Union files contained a letter signed by King in his capacity as Youth Affairs Committee Advisor for the National Black Republican Council, listing Thomas as one of two national contact people for NBRC campus chapters. 3 years later, with an investigation of abuse by King and the Webbs finally underway, Nellie was interviewed again. Speaking to Franklin Committee Detective Jerry Lowe, she repeated her account of the Chicago party, and said that Bush and the two men he arrived with appeared to have left the affair with a young black man she called Brant. Of course, as I have made clear, mere attendance by a politician, be he the president or any other office holder at a Larry King party, does not mean that that person knew of or was involved in Larry King's sordid activities. Almost every top Nebraska Republican, including myself, attended the two largest parties King ever hosted, the ones at the Republican conventions in 1984 and 1988. Bush's name surfaced again in Lowe's May 1989 review of reports by Thomas Vlahoulis from the State Attorney General's office. Sorensen told Vlahoulis that both Kimberly and Nellie brought up the name of George Bush and indicated they both had met him. On June 10, 1989, Lowe received a letter from a citizen. There was a psychologist in Omaha who used to work for the CIA. In response to a direct question by an Omaha psychiatrist regarding George Bush's private life, this psychiatrist reported hearing rumors when Bush was head of the CIA that correspond directly with one of the inferences made by Nellie Webb and commented to the psychiatrist, but how do you investigate your boss? Unquote. Whether or not a Bush presence at King's parties was confirmed, he certainly backed key Nebraskans tied to King. I would add that as the investigation in this case proceeded, a lot of people connected to the Franklin investigation died, and the Appendix A to the second edition chronicles some of those deaths. DeCamp writes, "At least 15 people who were close to the Franklin case have died under suspicious circumstances. Many of these deaths were violent, others were unexplained. 1. Bill Baker. He was a restaurant owner in Omaha and a partner of Larry King in homosexual pornography operations. He was found shot in the back of the head. Sean Bonner, B-O-N-E-R, brother of victim witness Troy Bonner, he died of a gunshot wound from Russian roulette," unquote. Gary Caradori, chief investigator for the Legislative Franklin Committee, Caradori told Associates days before his death that he had information that would blow this case wide open, unquote. He died when his plane crashed on July 11, 1990. Andrew A.J. Caradori died at the age of 8 in the plane crash with his father, Gary. 5. Newt Koppel. A confidential informant for Caradori and his investigative firm, Koppel was a key behind-the-scenes activist fighting the cover-up of the Franklin case. Son of Commonwealth Savings owner S.E. Koppel, businessman in his own right, an ex-champion wrestler with no prior health problems and parents who lived into their late 80s and 90s, Koppel suddenly died in his sleep, unquote, in March 1991 at the age of 70. Claire Howard. The former secretary of Alan Bayer, who arranged Bayer's pedophile trysts, Howard died in her sleep, unquote, in 1991. Mike Lewis was a former caregiver for victim witness Loretta Smith. He died of a severe diabetic reaction, unquote, at the age of 32. Joe Malik, associate of Larry King and an owner of Peony Park, where homosexual galas were held. His death from gunshot was ruled a suicide. Aaron Owen, the brother of Alicia Owen, victim witness Alicia Owen. He was found hanged in his cell in Lincoln, Nebraska, hours before one of his sister's court appearances. 10. Charlie Rogers, a reputed homosexual partner of Larry King. Rogers said that he feared for his life in the days before his death. His head was blown off with a shotgun in what was ruled a suicide. 11. Dan Ryan, an associate of Larry King. He was found strangled or suffocated in a car. 12. Bill Skaleski, an officer in the Omaha Police Department who was believed to be keeping a file on Larry King. He died of a heart attack. 13. Kathleen Sorensen, the foster parent for Nellie and Kimberly Webb after they fled the home of Larry King's relatives, Jarrett and Barbara Webb. She was an outspoken activist against Satanism. Her death in a suspicious car crash is related in Chapter 15. Curtis Tucker, as associate of Larry King, he fell or jumped out of the window of the Holiday Inn in Omaha. 15. Harmon Tucker, a school superintendent in Nebraska and Iowa, a reputed homosexual, his death had signs of satanic ritual murder. He was found dead in Georgia near the plantation where Harold Anderson and Nebraska-Iowa FBI chief Nicholas O'Hara used for hunting. So it's not, and of course the death of William Colby under strained circumstances could be added to this list. Other programs are available from a tape and CD duplication service called Spitfire, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. You can visit their website at spitfirelist.com. Sister station WFMU-FM is compiling the For the Record programs on real audio files. One of those addresses has recent program streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older programs are available for downloading only on a related URL. There are links to both from the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. That concludes side B of For the Record program number 318, Kidding Around, Pedophilia and Organized Child Molestation in the Republican Party. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.